Hello and welcome to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia and this is where we bring powerful conversations to light, conversations that touch our mental, emotional and social well-being. Today we're taking a deep and very important look into mental health fitness, especially from the perspective of someone who knows discipline, service and inner strength from lived experiences. I'm honoured to welcome Savjit Singh, MBE, to the show, a decorated British Army leader, Squadron Sergeant Major, and respected advocate for diversity, inclusion, and mental resilience, awarded the MBE in the 2020 New Year Honours for his outstanding contribution as chairman of the Defence Seek Network. Savjit has been a voice of leadership and positive change across both military and community spheres. He's here with us today to explore the difference between mental health and mental health fitness, to challenge the misconception that people in the armed forces suffer more than the general public, and to speak openly about the importance of emotional awareness, proactive support, and stigma-free dialogue around psychological well-being. Savjit, welcome to the show. Please tell us a little more about your background and what inspired your passion for mental health advocacy.
First of all, thank you very much for having me on your show and absolutely for your kind introduction to your listeners. Absolutely humbled. So my sort of journey started when I actually, moved over to this country. I was only 21 years old, having to, leave India and coming over here, not knowing what was coming to my way. So it was a bit more adjustment needed in terms of the culture-wise and, all of the stuff around me. While I was here within the first two to three years, then I decided to join the armed forces. So it was a bit more a shock after shock. So I needed to, kind of adjust myself and, be strong in terms of surviving into the environment. So that's where I've started picking up that, I can do this. And that's where I realized how important the mental resilience and the mental fitness is needed in terms of coping with your, daily challenges, recognizing your abilities and then contributing into the wider sort of community, society, or the operational effectiveness. So that kind of my sort of the journey within this country made me realize, this is the sort of things, I can do a bit more. And I, of course, raise awareness from the personal experience.
That's amazing. Thanks for sharing that powerful journey. I know that it's not easy to adapt to different environments and it takes a lot of strength, I would say. It takes a lot to adapt, not just in a new country, but also to the intense demands of armed forces. So thank you for sharing that, Savjit. I find it so inspiring how your message of service and discipline is balanced by such compassion and clarity around your own emotional well-being, as well as being wanting to be involved with others. So let's begin by understanding the framework of your work. What does mental health fitness mean to you, and how is it different from general mental health awareness?
So I think I would start probably with this word, trying to differentiate and keeping really basic that, there's a difference between mental health and a mental fitness. We normally, take everything in terms of, any mental fitness problem or mental health problem under the one umbrella, which is, right, I've got a mental health problem. No, it's not. Everyone is going to have a bad day at some point, but that doesn't mean you have a mental health problem. It's just that, that day your threshold probably reached to the maximum and you're struggling to deal with the daily challenges on the specific day. With the mental health fitness is about that you can work on it, and you can be more mental resilience, physically, mentally robust. With a mental health problem, unless it's been diagnosed by the health experts, then is a different stream. You have to adapt. You have to look at the looking at the specialist. Finding the resources. The all other the sort of like the control measure you put in place in terms of overcoming that and getting fully supported. So mental health is nothing to do with the mental health problem. It's just your ability to use resources and skills in order to adapt to life's challenges, as I've already said it. And you can work on it. There is like a lot of other elements. For example, like myself, I love fitness. So when I'm having a bit of a bad day, or I just need a bit of a break, I'll just put my, like PT kit on. I'll just go for a 5K run or 10K run and listen to the music. And then you just get lost in your thoughts, do a bit more self-reflection, and you come back fresh in terms of fully loaded, ready to tackle with that side of it. So that sort of things, it's all about the coping strategy, and everyone have a coping strategy, unless whether you have the ability to understand your coping strategy. For example, like someone likes to listen to the music, someone likes to really be cry or laugh or just have a drink. But then again, that has to be within the limit. Anything over excessive could then leaning into the mental health problem. So there's a very fine line in terms of having the mental fitness, having the bad day and then coping strategy, but then has to be within the limit.
Yes, and that's such a great example of using movement as medicine, as you said, and the way you describe it, just actually it's hitting the road, getting lost in the music or your own thoughts, and doing things like that within limitations is brilliant. And the physical activity can be a form of therapy in itself. And that's, I think, a very valuable point. It's not just about fitness, it's about reconnecting with yourself. And I think your approach to just generally dealing with those and distinguishing mental health. I would say, I'm going to add the word illness compared to mental health fitness are two completely different things. And I think it's important to distinguish the two. So I really do appreciate the powerful distinction. And it gives people a new language for strength, doesn't it? As I mean, let's explore that a little bit more. There's a common belief that people in the armed forces are more likely to struggle with mental health. And from your perspective, how true is that? And what does the data say? Because I know statistics speak louder than words at the moment. So can you just give us an idea? Where does this thought come from? Why is it that people can't distinguish the two? Well, why is it that people have these thoughts about people in the armed forces?
I think it's something to do historically. It's just when people come through those 80s, people have been deployed, and I think the lack of support in terms of from the defense, that has led to some serious accidents or incidents. People suffering with the PTSD, coming back from the operation tour and not being able to deal with the trauma they have suffered, while they were deployed. And that comes to a bit of two things: is the mental resilience and the support you have. So historically, I wouldn't be able to sort of give you the numbers, yes or no. But what I can tell you from the modern, in the modern sort of trends we have, and the system has put in place by the defense, it's exceptionally well. So if I give you some stats, and again, those stats are available on the government website as well. For example, like One in eight UK Armed Forces personnel were seen military health care for mental health related reasons in 2023-2024. That's one in eight, only 13%. That's a lot less if you're trying to compare to the civilian words and, you know, the sort of the normal general society we have at the moment. Mm-hmm. And like one in 50 UK Armed Forces personnel were seen by a specialist mental health, experts in 2023, and that's 2%. That's a very low number again compared to that. The rate of PTSD amongst UK Armed Forces remains low at around 2 in 1,000 personnel. So all these stats basically telling you the defense, the army, the military has a really good support system to support their soldiers, you know, whether you're deployed or you're at home or, well looked after welfare. So those numbers tells that actually, you know, that is kind of myth now in terms of what the general population, the society thinks of about the mental health problems or the PTSD in the armed forces. Historically, yes, maybe, because of the lack of support, but, you know, it's always about learning from your mistakes and making sure that you have put a really good support system to support your soldiers. So those numbers tells me that is really, really good. And I think the two things I would probably, again, would say, it's the culture itself within the armed forces. Because you have, for example, like in terms of the teamwork, you are within your team, you have a good rapport within your team. The culture allows you to open up openly, honestly discuss if you're having any problems. And I think 9 times out of 10, if you have a problem and discuss with your friend or with your team or with your senior leadership, you always tend to find some resources signposted to where you can get a further advice or support. Or sometimes, you can find a solution by just talking about the problem. So all these things are really, really good employed by the military.
And that's amazing. And it's encouraging to hear that there's so much out there for them. And, these resources are available. And what interests me is the numbers, because compared to general population, those numbers do seem very low. So absolutely, teamwork is a crucial pillar for mental resilience, and I think it's especially in high pressure environments like the armed forces, when the culture encourages openness and genuine connection, it becomes so much easier for individuals to speak up before things escalate, and it's wonderful those services are provided. And I know that in some cases, you've seen this from the inside. So your perspective really helps us understand both the strengths and the gaps in those systems. But what role does leadership play in normalizing mental health conversations within high pressure environments like the defenses?
I think the leadership has a big role to play in terms of, looking after your soldiers and the welfare. But equally, I would say that I think regardless of your rank and your position in the army, everyone is prone to the mental fitness or mental health. There are some senior leaders within the armed forces who have struggled previously with the mental health, but the support they had is actually, made them a stronger person at the end of it. But as a leader, from my perspective, I can only tell that, that I know my workforce, I know my soldiers, so I know them really about their personal circumstances, I know their family, I know how they're going to, how is it like a daily routine. So that's the observation I have every day when I just go and meet and greet them. If I see something's odd about those specific person, I always say, is everything okay? Would you like to talk about something? And sometimes when you ask those simple questions and, gives them that, that comfort, the safe space when they can be open and honest with you. And sometimes, they're just having a bad day and all I just say, look, take a day off, go home, right? And then come back fresh tomorrow morning. And that works, right? It's all about listen to your workforce. But I think equally you as a senior or as a leader, you have to have some form of knowledge about the mental health. For example, like how would you recognize someone is not, feeling. So, for example, I've been on to the mental fitness advocate instructor's course, where they give you all the toolkit you required. And part of that, I would like to mention this mnemonic we use. It is the festival. What I mean by festival is just have, for example, F stands for feeling. If someone's feeling sad, bored, or anxious, that again gives you that. Again, maybe similarly, they're having a little of a bad day, but then again, if that happens consistently, then again, that gives you that, the physical sign that something is not right. Energy, tired, fatigued, or something, lack of an effort, lack of sleep as well. Thinking, poor concentration, indecisiveness, they've not making the right decisions. Again, if I know one of my soldier, he's always been really good, hardworking, and is giving me the 100% output. And if consistently he's not been delivering what he was delivering in the past, then again gives me that sort of the physical sign, okay, something is not right there. So I pretty much work on this mnemonic called festival: feeling, energy, sleep, thinking, interest, value, aches, and life, right? But also, when you know your workforce, there's also other contributory factors can also add up into your threshold. That could be related to anything, for example, being a personal life, your relationships, your social interaction, your environment, and your culture. Culture is the biggest one. For example, if you have a toxic culture within your team or at your workplace or within your organization, that's always going to have a low morale, and that would add more sort of worries into each soldier's threshold. Health problems, behavior, actions, emotions, and stress. So these kind of external thoughts. So as a leader, if you are self-aware of these things, or if you have a little knowledge, you can also intervene at the early stage and then provide that support to your soldiers. So make sure that's got dealt in timely manner and it does not escalate to any further.
And I think that's so valuable, your leadership approach, really knowing your team and actually in and make, building that knowledge within yourself as well. And you talked about the mnemonic festival, all of these things, understanding people's personal circumstances and being present in their daily lives shows the kind of care and attentiveness that builds trust. And that day-to-day observation, the small check-ins, the willingness to notice when something's not quite right, that's often what makes the biggest difference. It's not just leadership in title, but it's leadership in presence and empathy, which is really important, I think. And I think that's so valuable. It's all about awareness, isn't it? But leadership can truly set the tone if you are leading from that place of empathy. And one conversation from someone in charge, like yourself, can open the door for so many others to speak up. But the public also plays a role in perception, doesn't it? And what misconceptions do civilians often have about service personnel and emotional strength or vulnerability? Because I think a lot of the public do turn to the defense for being strong and being mentally stable. What is your thoughts on that, Savjit?
I think there's two things. The soldiers are also human beings. They have emotions, they have feelings, and they are prone to, the emotional distress. And secondly, I think media plays a very massive part. If something goes wrong in terms of the military, they always highlight, the army, for either something for wrong reasons or something, to make up that story. And that normally the general society only reads what's in social media, for example, like on Facebook, and in the news, or on Instagram reels and things like that. But my sort of things is what you see is always not going to be the right. You just need to have the conversation with someone from, the organizations and find out, like we are having now. And the numbers I gave you, the stats, it tells that, it's all misconceptions. So I would probably say that how do we remove the misconceptions? I honestly don't know the answer, because it's something you do internally in terms of looking after. But in terms of the defense, in the military, it's such a huge numbers, and there's always going to be some misconception related to specific services as well. But I like to focus on the positive. I like to focus on my team, and I like to focus on how can I make their day a bit better than yesterday, whatever the supports they need to provide. So I would probably say whatever you read in the social media and the newspaper is not always going to, yeah, some part of it is going to be right, but not all. But there's always going to be the story on the other side as well. So there's two sides of the story. So, I would probably say people need to just see the both sides of it and make up their own mind in terms of when it comes to the misconception.
You've raised two incredible important points of humanity and perception. But Savjit, thank you for your powerful insights so far. We'll continue this important and thought-provoking conversation in just a moment. But first, let's take a short break for a word from our sponsors here on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show. I'm here with Savjit Singh, MBE, British Army Leader, Diversity Advocate, and Mental Health Ambassador. Before the break, Savjit shared some compelling truths about mental health fitness and challenged some of the most persistent myths around service personnel and emotional well-being. Let's pick up from where we left off. Welcome back, Savjit.
Thank you.
And earlier on, you were talking about misconceptions and how it's so important for the general public, civilians, to actually realize that, of course, those emotions, vulnerabilities are going to be there for the soldiers, because after all, everyone's human. And yes, it's important that people don't take everything literally from what they view on media, social media, or any media influence. It's so important that people actually understand that the military issues are not always portrayed in a way that is true. And I think that's really important. It's clear there's a gap between how society views the military resilience and what actually goes on behind the uniform. So can you speak to the power of routine training and structure when it comes to building emotional resilience?
So I think the way we sort of like build the resilience, mental resilience, is two-way. Through education and through some physical activities. When we talk about the education, then we conduct like mental fitness workshops where we gather people and we go through different scenarios, and then we'll just practice that, having the giving people a conversation skills. If someone is having a real issues, how would you approach? That comes from body language to your sitting posture, to active listening, and not providing your opinion about your things, going with your experience. It's all about listening to them and understanding what resources you have and how can you signpost them so they can get a better help. So that's the education. And also, we at time to time we do like different courses, which allows you to give that education piece. For example, it's called TRIM, Traumatic Risk, Incident Manager. I think I just need to get that wording right, but it's called TRIM course. And then we have like mental fitness advocate courses. So the Army is doing really, really good in terms of providing the education. When it comes to the physical element, then you have, people are deploying on exercises. When we talk about the exercises, doing something where you're going to be outside your comfort zone, like in a cold night, you are going to be in the harbor area, you know, doing the stuff like, you know, doing patrolling, you know, doing stags, and you pretty much thinking, well, why am I doing this? You know, that questions yourself, you know, the reasons you have been in the armed forces. But again, that testing your mental resilience, also building your mental resilience at the same time, you know, the physical education or the physical training we have, you know, which is about 3 or 4 sessions in a day. And then you put those youngster, new soldiers through them and basically just shape them, mold them like, okay, this is just the beginning, but if you carry on like this, this is how you're going to build your mental resilience. You know, but I think these two parts always works alongside, and then, you know, and then you get this sort of the best results out of it. But I suppose, you know, as you go through the ranks, the more time you spend in the armed forces, you know, and as you get better because you understand the environment, and then once you've done one, you know, one activity, then have to do a second times, you already know, oh, I've done this, I can easily do that. So that mindset shows that your mental resilience compared to the first time when you were about to do the activity has changed. Now you find that comfort zone the second time. When it comes to third times, you just do it naturally, so that becomes your second nature. So that's the two ways we do that.
And it's that proactive element that stands out. Mental fitness isn't reactive, it's trained like a muscle. And speaking of training, what kind of support systems, formal or informal, made a difference for you personally during your service?
I think I probably would say I was, I don't know if I was lucky enough that because I grew in India in a small village. When I was a kid, you know, we always have, like, sometimes we never had a slippers, you know, we used to go barefoot to the school, you know, and when we'd done that and come back and you just play out, you know, outside the school, and you've seen the family circumstances, the culture you have, that builds your mental resilience at a very early stage. So when I had the experience back home as a kid in India, and you come over here in this country, and especially being in the armed forces, and then you've been put in the same situation, and then say, oh, this is easy compared to what I had as a childhood. So I think that's, my childhood has played a massive part in terms of my resilience. Threshold was way higher than compared to my you know, peers during that time. So you know, but again, you can always do better. You know, you cannot never be guaranteed, or you can never take everything you know, as like, oh, you know, I am good at it, I don't need any further training. I think as a leader, as a human being, you always strive for you know, extra miles to make sure you become better each day. But my time in the armed forces, I think done 21 years now, you know, every courses I've done, every deployment I've done, you know, I always, like, when I go somewhere else, oh, I used to be a little bit nervous. But when you get there, you read your environment, you read your surroundings, you read the people you are with, and you find the comfort zone. And then you start having those conversations, bit of a banter, bit of a laugh, you know, break the ice. And this is how I used to build my mental resilience every time I've been through it. But I think the other thing, I would say probably the confidence plays a massive part, you know, anxiety and confidence as well. If you're very anxious and you don't have the confidence, no matter, you know, how good your mental resilience is, you're always going to be struggling with a new environment. But if you have a good confidence, you trust your abilities, and you're going to be a little anxious, that's absolutely fine, you can do that. But with that confidence, you can always overcome those anxiety, and you can develop your mental resilience.
And it's powerful how you describe the shift over time, how unfamiliar activities eventually became second nature. And that's the essence of true mental fitness, isn't it? It's not just a skill, it's a mindset that's continuously built through repetition, exposure, and reflection. And the more we face, the more confident we become in our ability to handle the next challenge. And your point is spot on. Mental fitness isn't reactive, it's trained like a muscle, isn't it? It's your lived experience that adds such valuable depth to the conversation. So I was wondering, you spoke about your life in India and, you know, just being South Asian. As someone deeply involved in inclusion, how do cultural beliefs influence how people view mental health, particularly in the South Asian communities?
I think, and that's only my opinion and what I've seen so far, the South Asian community, I think they have a stigma about mental health, you know, and that's not right, because you know, people tend to hide those emotional distress, you know, and they have a wrong coping strategy. For example, like, you know, within South Asian, if someone's having a bit of a bad day, right, in the evening, right, let's have a couple of drinks, you know, it's okay for one day, a couple of drinks. When it becomes a couple of drinks every day and the limit's getting excessive on a weekly basis, that is something is not right, then it's something is alarming. I think they find it, well, South Asian community probably have the stigma to be, you cannot be labeled as having mental health issues, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, it's against their pride what people will think about me. You know, I have, for example, in my place of work, a specific South Asian community, they have, you know, a problem, but when I offered, it seems like not to take it, you know, even though I'm the leader. And I understand why they refuse that, because that again, stigma. Well, I've done so much time in the armed forces. I'm a soldier. You know, I don't need your help. I'm okay. I can deal with the issues. But that's their only view. And that's their sort of like, you know, not thinking outside the box and the long lasting impact. But as someone else, I can see that, because I share the sort of like the same culture, you know, and then I know that what they are doing is not the right coping strategy. So within South Asian community, I think, you know, the stigma is they can't be labeled as having mental health issue is probably the biggest barrier you have to deal with it. And how do you deal with it? It's like a different sort of options, you know, either you find someone, a friend, you know, with them, and you say, look, I need your help. Can you please have a chat with your friend and say, look, if there's any issues, we can sort it out. But sometimes, like, you know, I have friends as well, you know, they're from South Asian. And when we meet up, you know, the conversation we have, and sometimes, you know, they drop the hint, and I'm just thinking, well, what you just mentioned seems to mean that that's where you're. So then we say, okay, right, let's sit down, let's have a chat. And sometimes you have to force them, because they are and I have friends, we've been friends for more than, you know, almost 15, 20 years, and they still sometimes, they are not very open in terms of talking about that. I'm just saying, look, I'm your friend. I'm not here to judge you, but you just need to be open and honest so I can help you and I can support you. So that stigma is the biggest barrier in terms of getting associated with the mental health issues.
And these conversations are so needed in communities where mental health is still wrapped in shame or silence. So I know that you're absolutely right. Coping strategies like alcohol can easily become normalized. I've come across that so often as a therapist. And what starts as just a couple of drinks to unwind can spiral into a daily habit. And your insight as someone from within the community and in a leadership role is powerful, where you are in a position to both empathize and influence. So when you said, I understand why they refuse help, but I also see why it's harmful, that's exactly the tension so many leaders face as well. It's not just about offering support, it's about reshaping cultural narratives. And one way forward might be continuing to normalize conversations like this one. I think it's so valid and important that we're having this conversation right now. So what advice would you give to someone who's physically strong but emotionally stuck, whether they're from the South Asian community or otherwise, but they're unsure how to reach out for help?
I would always start with one word. It's okay not to be okay, right? And we are all human beings. We have emotions, we have feelings, and we are all going to have a bad day, right? But it's understanding your threshold, and that's the key thing, understanding your threshold. Because you might, you know, you might be having a bad day one day, and then, you know, you find the next day. But if that bad day starts to happen on a consistent basis, then you know that you're reaching out of threshold and you're going to burst in any time. So understanding your threshold, but also your friends and your family plays a massive part. You know, sort of like your behavior actions. If you are not being normal, like, you know, and then someone should be not thinking, well, that's okay, you know, maybe just having this. But then if you start seeing those changes, you need to intervene or let someone else know so that that person can be supported at the right time.
Savjit, thank you so much. We'll continue this really thought-provoking conversation. But first, let's take another short break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show. I'm here with Savjit Singh, MBE. And Savjit, you were describing so beautifully what you've touched on is the essence of self-awareness and community support, and understanding that there is that threshold. And it's so crucial because that's what helps us catch ourselves before things escalate into burnout or breakdown. So can you share with us and the listeners, how do you personally maintain your mental health fitness today? Are there any daily habits or principles you live by?
Personally, I have a lot of hobbies and keep myself busy. So I'm not focused on, like, if I'm having a bit of a bad day, for example, like I've told you earlier, like, you know, if I'm having sort of like, you know, a little bit upset morning, I'll just in lunchtime, I'll just put my trainers and I'll go for a jog. Mm-hmm. Equally, like I like cricket. So summer season has started. So I'm always look forward to either Wednesday evening or Saturday where I can go away and play. And that takes my mind away. And then I come back fresh as well. But I think the other thing I regularly talk to my friends, you know, if I have any issues, I always, you know, have speed dial my friends and say, look, I'm having this issue, can you please help me out? I don't know what else to do. I think I'm just being very open and honest because I understand I'm fully aware of the things. When I know that if I'm struggling with something, I know what support system I have built around me and what networks I have where I can reach out to them and you know, and can help me. But I think discipline is quite key, and having the extra hobbies always helpful. For example, like I'm like cycling, so I like motorbikes. In the evening, I sometimes, when I finish my day, I'll just pick my motorbike and I'll just go out, you know, for a couple of hours and come back, you know, and that's me. And love reading books in the evening as well. So having hobbies always helps you to take your mind away from that and focus somewhere else. But equally, you know, you can listen to the music, you know, watch films, watch TV, do the, you know, meditation, you know, all other things. But I absolutely, you know, I will advocate that having extra hobbies always helps your mental health.
And you're really highlighting there that power of creativity as well, having those hobbies. It's not just about one big coping strategy, but a lifestyle built on small consistent choices, like the exercise, like the hobbies, the social connections, and knowing when to reach out. And practical insight like this is gold. Small consistent practices really do build resilience. So let's end with the bigger picture. What are the biggest changes you'd like to see in how we approach mental health training in schools, workplaces, or communities?
I think the message I would like to say that any mental health awareness or education should not be a tick box just because you have to deliver it, you have been told, someone needs to be passionate about it. There has to be a real drive, real passion, you know, for it to be successfully implemented and delivered so people can actually take something away from it. So when you start, okay, just because I've been told I need to deliver this and you half-heartedly deliver this and the audience you have for the school or the, you know, the students, you know, they are there and they will be confused and then they will lose the interest in the specific subjects. And when they get delivered second time, they're saying it's going to be boring or not as good as the last time. So I think it's just the having the key sort of passion and the main driver behind it and real motivation to really be advocate of it and deliver the crux of the mental health and the mental health fitness and the coping strategy. That's the key thing, I would say.
It's leaders like you who live the message, not just speak it, and I love that. And finally, if you could leave our listeners with one final message about strength, service, and self-awareness, what would it be?
Like as I said to you earlier, you know, it's okay not to be okay, right? And you're going to have a bad day every, you know, you're going to have a bad day at some point. But it's just important that you look after yourself because, you know, if you look after yourself, it's all about contributing in terms of healthy body, healthy mind is equal to healthy human. So the both elements are important. Look after your fitness, look after your mind, and you will probably have a better lifestyle and a better mental health.
Savjit, thank you for being with us today and for the clarity, compassion, and conviction with which you speak. Where can the listeners find you?
I'm on my LinkedIn as well. So if the people want to get reached to me on LinkedIn, Sarvjit Pal Singh, that's my LinkedIn. Please do approach me, add me to your networks and see if I can be any help. Or, you know, I have Instagram, and I'm not really sure if I am allowed to leave my contact details with you, and then you can share with your listeners, for example, my email, or my phone numbers. You know, I'm quite reachable and I'm absolutely happy to help with that side of it.
And that's wonderful. Savjit, thank you so much. You've not only served your country, you continue to serve humanity by breaking silence, challenging stigma, and showing what true strength looks like. And to all you tuning in, thank you for listening. Whether you're in the armed forces, a caregiver, or simply someone who's curious about your own mental fitness, I hope this episode leaves you with deeper awareness and stronger tools. This is the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio, where your well-being matters most.